Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Look, if you're a bigger guy like us, have you ever bought a shirt that technically fits, but it doesn't, like, actually fit? That's why this is my favorite brand of all f***ing time. One Bone. I'm in love with everything that I put on today. In fact, I would say I've never loved a brand more than One Bone. Trust me, you guys are going to romanticize getting dressed in the morning. That's what One Bone does. Go to onebone.com and upgrade to a fit that is actually built for you. Use code Barstool for 20% off to see the difference firsthand. After one wear, you'll understand why standard fits don't make the cut.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 335. I got that on the, I think I got that one on the dot. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack Trovolins, day late. Oh, 334. Fuck.
Close. We probably sound so crispy right now.
We're in the studio for the first time since
pre-COVID.
Probably March. Because we've done it on Zoom and it's honestly easier.
Being able to do everything from home.
Yeah. You know? But we're in the studio because we delayed. Ken Jack, I think your power or something at your Wi-Fi snowed here. So yeah, we're in the studio. Tro's on Skype, which actually Tro usually sounds worse on Skype. So I guess that's
You guys sound awful.
We
sound
do.
Bad?
Yeah, you sound like you're just yelling into a can of dip.
So for you it sounds bad because for sure on the.
Yeah, no, you guys will sound fine. It's just
okay.
For some reason the live audio whenever you're over Skype just sounds like you're being electrocuted in your ears.
Mm. Well, it sucks to be you, but it's good for our listeners.
Yeah, I'm going to soldier through it. I'll be okay.
We're a day late. Just things. You know, sometimes you want the full effort podcast. We all had shit going on this week. It's okay to delay. And you know, I'm happy we delayed because we can talk about the Mortal Kombat trailer.
That's
now.
True. It worked out very well.
It ended
well.
Up working out very, very positively. We will talk about the Mortal Kombat trailer. Also, Ken Jack interviewed Michael K. Williams.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that. We are going to be doing Willy's Wonderland, the Nick Cage movie, which is something.
Did not star Michael K. Williams.
It's a trip.
Different Williams.
It's a movie. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Like I enjoyed my time with it. It's just it's interesting. I'm in a bracket, so we're here on a normal middle of the week, doing things.
Trouble looking at us when we said bracket. Like, oh fuck, did you?
No, I got a bracket.
Oh,
it's
we're prepared.
A Mortal Kombat
okay,
bracket.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah! Okay,
we're gonna do the Mortal Kombat characters.
I honestly think it's so good.
That's good for me, as I know nothing about Mortal Kombat.
It's a good thing we're reviewing
the thing
now.
You can look at pictures of them as we do.
Probably better. It's me. I'm learning as we go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which one's
cooler. We'll just do the original, I think, because I think there's 8 in the original Mortal Kombat.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what's going on? I'm trying to get you guys to play Valheim.
I downloaded this weekend.
What
am I downloading it on? PC?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
It's probably not on Mac, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I don't know. It's on PC. It's only like a gigabyte. It's a very quick download.
I want to, but my Wi-Fi is knocked out of my apartment, which is why I'm currently
here. Yeah,
that's
okay.
Which sucks.
That's fine. You know, you can only do so much you can during the week. When the weekend rolls around, you crack one beer and play a video game. There's nothing better, Tone.
I know. I was actually here at Barstool. We were lucky enough to get tested twice a week by like personnel that come in from like a third party company, and they do all of our testing. And I was just like chatting up with the guy this morning about Zelda and how great the Switch One is.
Breath of the Wild?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he had only just bought it. He just started it. And he's like, dude, this is amazing. Like, it's so cool. Like, we're getting to walk around. Like, he's describing like the beginning stage. And I was like, dude, just wait. Like, you're not even exploring the open world yet. You're about to, like, have your mind fucking exploded.
Yeah, for real. That was a great game. I miss that. I miss that. The game got harder to play as I went on. I felt like the first 20 hours with it were a lot of fun, and then the shrines got a bit repetitive, but I soldiered through. I didn't do all the shrines.
I did all the shrines first.
You did all the shrines? I didn't do all the shrines. I didn't have the patience to do all the shrines. I tackled the divine beast. I did enough shrines to get the master sword, went and pulled the master sword. That was cool. Gotta love the master sword.
I didn't finish the Nintendo game. All I did was finish the shrines, but it was so fun.
Nintendo had like one of their events this week, and then they came out and like they didn't really announce anything that I found too particularly exciting.
The fucking what? They're remaking Skyward Sword.
I don't even think it's a remake. I think it's a remaster. Yeah. Maybe remake, remaster. What's the difference? I don't even know. But then you know, there's a new Splatoon. I think people like Splatoon, so I'm not gonna be too mean against that one. But you know, like they knew what everybody wanted to see. It's been a rough year. They knew what we wanted. They knew we wanted Breath of the Wild too. Yeah. They knew that. They weren't able to deliver. That's fine. That's why they're Nintendo, because Nintendo makes great games, but I don't feel like they have a lot of respect for their customer, or else they wouldn't be charging like $60 for like Mario 3D Remake in the store.
Mm-hmm. Every time I think of Nintendo announcements, the first person that comes to mind is that Chonk Boy Reggie Fils-Aimé, or whatever his name is. Fils-Aimé, you know what I'm talking about? Like the United States Reggie. Nintendo president.
Yeah. The president to Doug Bowser.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Dude, that guy was great. And also, that's one of those games though, Breath of the Wild, I wish I could erase from my memory and play again. They always talk about that with like movies or shows, like, oh, I wish I could like, you know, erase my brain from Breaking Bad and go watch it again. There's like 10 video games I wish I could just wipe from my brain and re-experience. And Breath of the Wild is one of them. I think Oblivion and Skyrim, both are one of them. Probably Fallout New Vegas. Like a lot of just open world RPGs. It's such an experience. I feel like you get very fond memories of your times with those, right?
Speaking of Las Vegas, I miss Las Vegas.
I can't imagine how Jeff feels right now.
The show with Josh Duhamel?
Yes.
James Caan?
Yes.
Vegas?
Las Vegas, or was it called just Vegas?
Las Vegas.
I don't remember.
Las Vegas.
On TNT. Vegas.
Which makes it sound it's such a clunkier show title. Las Vegas. Like, just Vegas would have been, yeah. Not. I miss it, too, and I was just there in September, so.
I miss.
Yeah.
I feel like Vegas needs to make a comeback. Like, not that it ever left, but certainly, and it could be because I'm getting older, but we talked about, like, how every song was about partying in 2008. Like, everybody just went to Vegas all the time. You went anywhere, it was Vegas. Probably because I was, like, you know, 24, 25. But I think it's just bring the Black Eyed Peas back and let's have, like, them, you know, create a new song called, like, let's show up to the party and then just premiere in Vegas and we can all go to Omnia and, like, just dance once this thing clears up. And then I can have two beers and approximately you know, just 16 ounces of Miller Lite and immediately get a hangover.
I think add on one, like, frozen drink onto there. Like, one, like frozen drink where you're like, I'm just going to treat myself to this, and it's just nothing but sugar, and it just is the cherry on top of the hangover.
I do miss, like, the small interactions that you just seem so long gone now, like tipping a bathroom attendant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like tipping the bathroom attendant. I don't know why. Like, I feel like I always have a connection when I'm in there, and like I have a little conversation and I enjoy it. But I haven't had that in a while.
I miss like having stories about athletes getting caught in Vegas. Was it Manziel that got caught in Vegas when he had like a concussion?
Yeah. What was his name? What was his alter ego?
Fuck,
Johnny Manziel,
yeah.
Alter ego, Vegas. Fuck, he had like a blonde hair. It was it was like Billy. It was like Billy. It was Billy something.
Not Billy Football. It is something like
it was like
that,
Billy
though?
Manziel. No, yeah. It was like, yeah. There was a shirt. I owned a shirt of him like doing the money sign. It said Billy on the back of it, and he stunk.
We need a new casino. Is what we need.
COVID
like,
casino.
There needs to be yeah, just a new big mainline big casino that they open up. And like, let's get rid of the non-theme posh casinos like the Cosmo and all those. Let's just do another theme one.
Well, you heard about the Domino's Village, right?
No.
The Domino's is making low-income housing, and they're calling it the Domino's Village. Not a joke. And that's just, I guess, our avenue. We make the Carl's Jr. Casino. You live and you gamble there.
Well, there used to be a Hooters Casino there. Oh, man. And the Hooters Casino, they lost the name. It's something else now.
Honkers.
But
Big Mommy Milker Casino.
So many of their casinos.
Sponsored by Resident Evil Village.
I love any. Like, I mean, they got great casinos to begin with, though. Like, I love Aria. Like, I mean, I am personally a Cosmo person. Though I think the next time I go, I'll probably stay in Aria. I will say this: you realize very quick if you go like now during like the pandemic and things being shut down. You really realize how important like a club is if you're like around this age for breaking up your night if you also gamble, because you're like, because that breaks up the night so much. That's getting ready, showering, you know, drinking beforehand, doing like otherwise you are just there on those tables for a long time. And I was lucky. September, I had a heater of a lifetime. I'll never have that successful a Vegas trip ever again.
$650, baby.
I'll never have that again. So like, I got lucky, but like, I had one buddy out of my group of friends. He was the only one who had a bad trip gambling wise, and he's like, I can't come back until clubs open. He goes, I can't just fucking sit here for 6 hours. And like, that's 6 hours where you're just not losing money. That's like the one key thing. It made me really appreciate like having that break when you go there. But I also like, I really like going there. And I've said this on many platforms. The best way to do Vegas, if you want a real trip with the boys, with the lads, you fly into California, go to like Orange County area. This past time we got an Airbnb right on the main street in Huntington Beach, right overlooked the beach. And then you drive into Vegas after like a nice 2.5 days at the beach. It's great. You get breakfast in like Laguna Beach. It's awesome. That's my favorite way to do it. It's the best way.
Let me tell you my ideal Vegas day. Wake up at 7:30 a.m. And then you and the boys, you can come too, but the boys and I, me and the boys, whatever you want to call it, we head down to Senior Frogs for a brunch at 8. And then we kind of hang around there, and then we walk up the strip to Twin Peaks at Planet Hollywood on the Miracle Mile, and just eat right there. And then we hit up the one of those Walgreens that just has the froyo in it for some reason.
get
some froyo, and then we end the night at the greatest Vegas casino of them all. That's right, folks, the Excalibur. And we have dinner at Dick's Last Resort where
the flagship Taco Bell is there.
Little fat man. Shoves crab legs in my face.
It's just a hat that says, I like moobs. Yeah. That's,
it all again. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's go out and let's party. I want to bring that back.
The classic party song. One day. One day soon, hopefully.
Shout out to Las Vegas. That's why I like their hockey team, because I liked the city. Sometimes it's all you need. Anyway, now I'm just on rabbit holes looking at future casinos. They wanted to build a beach behind the Wynn. You seen that project? It never happened.
No, I thought they had a golf course behind there.
They wanted to build a beach.
Was it behind the Wynn, or is it like behind the Sands? Because the Sands got that big old convention center on that.
They were gonna, I think they were gonna take the golf course out. Yeah, they were gonna take the golf course out and build a $1.6 billion fake beach with like sand and waves and everything. I'm showing it to I can't share my screen that I'm showing it to Ken Jack. They wanted to build a literal beach,
almost like the Abu Dhabi like fake sand thing. Yeah,
and then they ended up canceling the project.
They're gonna have a hard time competing with NEOM, the city that's a straight line.
Someone tweeted at us, and sorry, I forget who it was, but like after the Trump casino got demolished a couple days ago, and what was it, AC, right? Like the only thing left standing in the vicinity was the Rainforest Cafe. Like the demolition is the only thing that it didn't touch. which is perfect.
The Rainforest Cafe is, they need to stop bulldozing the Rainforest Cafes.
Yeah, don't bulldoze the Rainforest Cafe. Yeah, just like, and at the end of it, end quotes, or end parentheses.
There's long been a rumor in my hometown of Cedar Park, Texas, that the really fucking shitty mall in Cedar Park called the Lakeline Mall, they were going to build the, like, the next Mall of America there, but there was, like, an endangered lizard living in the woods. I couldn't believe a story less. Could not believe a story less. They couldn't, you build the whole thing because there's, like, an endangered lizard there. And it's just the least believable thing I've ever been told.
What if they like were able to come to an agreement and like they could build the mall, but the lizard had to be kept in an 8-foot by 8 plexiglass,
they built
plexiglass
around
box
it.
Box in the middle of the mall.
Same
in,
guy
in Louisville, Kentucky, there was a bar called like something called Lizards. It's like 2007, and there was a see through floor that had like a big. I don't think it was a Komodo dragon because those are like legit dangerous. But it was like, what are the big iguanas? I think a monitor or something like that.
Oh yeah,
anyway,
this bar
had a gigantic lizard that was like below you in the floor as you were drinking, and that always made me sad because that lizard, that had to be miserable.
Nah, that's not a great existence.
No, especially when you're like a lizard and you just, you know, they're just there for the vibes.
Classically known, that's what lizards do.
They're vibe lizards. Okay, that's it. Let's move on. Got stuff to get to. This episode brought to you in part by Manscaped. It says, hey, fellas. Hey, fellas. We're in the thick of winter. Storm's brewing, folks. Shave up. You don't want a mess down there, folks. Manscaped, they're here to provide you with the best tools for grooming below the belt, offering precision-engineered tools for the nuts, everything around there. They got the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. It's the best hygiene tool.
Can you say that?
What?
Can you say that?
Say nuts?
I'm telling you, they have the best copy person.
I know.
Like, they bring the fire.
Why can't I say nuts?
I think he thought you were ad-libbing
is the thing. But no, that's part of the copy.
Yeah, I thought you just were like going off the cuff. And
no,
know,
it's
like
just family jewels. I just didn't want to say family jewels, so I said nuts.
Nuts is
that's
okay.
Fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
I can go with nads, maybe.
Joe's trying to take back nuts.
I have no problem with it. I just, look, it was aggressive, and I'm fine with it.
Nuts isn't aggressive.
What's the,
balls is more aggressive.
Wait, what's what they call it in Tall Girl? Oh, the nards.
That's a 90s.
Yeah, that's big 90s shit.
You think balls is more aggressive than nuts?
Like, ow, my balls. Like, that's like. Tell me that doesn't sound more aggressive. Like, oh, my nuts. It just like, it sounds like old 50s person.
In that context, yeah. It's like...
like the Idiocracy TV show.
Like if you're Mr. Belvedere, oh my, I've sat on my balls.
Their Lawnmower 3.0, it's got ceramic blade and advanced skin safe technology, which is more important than anything because you don't want any snags, cuts, nicks, none of that. Trimmer is also waterproof. You can trim in the shower, jacuzzi, wherever you – jacuzzi. You're an asshole if you do that.
Jeff has a little dop kit with him. What's it? Don't mind me, guys. You're just doing the Captain Morgan stance off the side of the chair.
They got the performance package. Best thing you can buy in 2021, folks. Got the lawnmower, the weed whacker for ears and nose hair. Don't pick your nose hairs. Performance boxer briefs and a travel bag. Nose hair. Ew, yuck. Don't pick it either, though. You could die.
Mm-hmm. We're anti-nose hair picking. Yeah.
Crop reviver. The crop preserver for the balls. Everything they have is great. Manscaped, all their products are outstanding. And the more you find, you're like, oh, this is also useful. 20% off free shipping with the code LIGHTS, LIGHTS at manscaped.com. They got a ton of other things as well. 20% off free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code LIGHTS, 20% off code LIGHTS. All right, first thing of the night, or the morning, whenever the fuck you're listening. Mortal Kombat trailer coming to HBO Max and theaters on April 16th, 2021. James Wan was one of the producers, directed by Simon McQuoid, who doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so I can't really tell you anything that he's done. Here's the synopsis. A washed-up mixed martial arts fighter named Cole Young is unaware of his hidden lineage or why he is being hunted by Sub-Zero. and assassins. Concerned for the safety of his family, he seeks out a clique of fighters that were chosen to defend Earthrealm.
True.
Earthrealm? What?
Yeah. I mean, I played a few of the games. Yeah. I mean, there's different...
In a high-stakes battle realms. Against the forces of Outworld. You're not going to recognize many people in this movie, I'll put it that way. This is not like a star. This is not The Rock and Rampage.
I recognize like three or four of them, and only because they play minor characters in TV shows that I like, and that's it. And that's like the only reason why. And like a big one of those is like Hiroki Sanada, who's like a big time like Leo point meme every time I see him in something, like that guy. And I think they have someone from Wu Assassins, which is like a Netflix show I watched like three episodes of. And one guy who's
Hiroki Sanada was in Endgame too.
Yeah,
Hawkeye
that's right.
kills him.
Yeah. Hawkeye just shreds him up. He plays Yakuza guys a lot. And he also has a guy who's really, really good in the Cinemax show Warrior. He's like an awesome martial artist. But that's about it for me,
but
as far as who I know.
Trill, what did you? The trailer was very bloody. It was the red band trailer. A lot of kills. And like, I didn't play Mortal Kombat. I played it. I know it, but I don't know it that well. But recognizable things, finish him, all that shit. Like it was all in there. What did you think?
Yeah, get over here.
Get over here. Yeah, score from Scorp.
Which that was kind of the stinger of the trailer. I thought the stinger of the trailer was going to be Goro. So Jeff Goro is the big four-armed. I think four arms. Four or six. I think it's four. Big four-armed. Who is like? I think was he the original boss of MK1 or was that? Sang Sung or I'm trying to remember back, but I thought that was going to be the tease. I thought, oh, there's Goro, but they just threw Goro in there, and they get over here was kind of the trailer. I thought it was fine. Here's the thing about Mortal Kombat: like all you really need are Scorpion and Sub-Zero. That's it. You got Scorpion and you got Sub-Zero in there. You've got 95% of everyone's favorite characters, and everyone else is just kind of like there, like Kano. Okay, like nobody likes Kano. Kano sucks. I guess Johnny Cage and Liu Kang are kind of cool, but you're coming for Scorpion and Sub-Zero. So I like the ice effects. I thought they did a good job with that in the trailer. I'm very interested in this. I'm glad it's coming to HBO Max. This is like one of those things where I'm glad I don't have to go to a theater to see it, but at the same time, this does look like a lot of fun to watch. I've played a decent share of Mortal Kombat. I played the Mortal Kombat 10 that came out like 6 years ago. That's like the most recent Mortal Kombat I played. It's pretty fun.
I think as far as what I thought about it, I thought it was really cool. The like you were saying, the ice effect. They did the Frozone thing with the bullet, which was kind of cool. And then he like shatters Jax's arms off, which I don't know enough about Mortal Kombat's lore to know if that's like it was always the story as to why he had metal arms. I think that Cole Young, who's like the protagonist here, is going to be Johnny Cage. Like, I think that's going to be whatever the progression down the line for the series. Like, I don't know if he takes the name for whatever. But the rest of the guys are cool. Liu Kang was cool. But I think it really does come down to what you were saying, in that you just need to really nail Sub-Zero and you really need to nail Scorpion. And they have two great actors for that. The guy who plays Sub-Zero, Joe Taslim, is a really, really good martial artist, like I was saying before, and I think he's going to nail the character. I'm just excited. And like you said, Troll, not a movie where I would be super pumped to watch it in a theater, but I am extremely excited to watch it on a small screen because I think it's going to increase my entertainment value because it's, you know, just a little bit more convenient to watch it.
Mortal Kombat 3 had some of the best arcade cabinet art.
Yeah.
Of all time. Have you ever seen this, Jeff?
I'm sure I have.
Hold on, I gotta find it.
There's one at Barcade, like one of the ones near here. Or I guess maybe our old office now. It is very cool.
As you said that, I'll give my thoughts. I mean, again, I'm not a big Mortal Kombat person. I'm interested in this. I think this is one of those movies that you're gonna have to kind of set your expectations at a certain level. This is not like some of the past video game movies we've seen as well. Like I think Rampage like didn't really go full on out, and like Rampage was fine. Like, it was kind of dumb as fuck. We ate cereal in the theater when we watched it.
That's right. The ape cereal,
like,
yeah.
Like 10 o'clock in the morning. But it didn't go kind of full on out there. And I think because of that, you kind of had to grade it on a level of, like, this is a serious attempt. This, I'm not saying it's not serious, but, like, there's a very clear intent here. And so I think on a bit of a curve, that's how you have to kind of grade it. So we'll see. I think it being on HBO Max is going to help a lot. I would not want to trek all the way to the theaters for this. I would have. I still might. If we can fucking watch here, I will. Unfortunately, the theater's still not open by me. But yeah, that's kind of my two cents on it. I like the arcade art you just said. It looks fantastic.
Mortal Kombat's an interesting franchise, though, because the first
movie was good.
Yeah.
I'll stand by that. I enjoyed the first movie. The 90 whatever.
The first movie did the best job at capturing like a video game in a movies up until like I don't know what point, cuz I feel like I if you challenge me to name a good video game movie right now, like I'd have a hard time thinking through it. Like I know we've talked about it, like the Tomb Raider movie maybe, I don't know. It's hard to do.
Pokemon Detective Pikachu. I think it's right now at the top.
That is our highest on our website. The highest rated. It goes Pokemon Detective Pikachu, Tron Legacy. Do they really? I guess they count. They count.
Tron Legacy
Sonic,
for sure.
Then Tomb Raider, and then this list is like it's like, you know, when people say like 95% of all technologies in the last 5 years, like that's their video game movies.
I saw someone tweet, which was unfair. They said like oh, is Mortal Kombat going to break the streak and finally like the video game movie curse and make a good video game movie? It's like I think there are a couple good video game movies. Like I think Detective Pikachu is good. I think Detective Pikachu is good. I think Tron Legacy is good. There's not been a great video game movie. You know what I mean? Like one for us that I think cracks into like that like A tier, S tier sort of like realm. And I don't think there will be for a long time, to be honest, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this Mortal Kombat movie will be good. I think it'll be entertaining. But the whole Mortal Kombat franchise and how that took off was like really interesting because it was all based around the gore that was in the video game and the hubbub around it and kind of, you know, the whole freak out in the 90s about violence in video games and whatnot. Because the original Mortal Kombat, like, while fun to play, was like, I didn't find it to be that all good of a video game. I'm sure there's a lot of people that share that take with me. You had a game like Street Fighter II, which was like, it was like really gorgeous at the time. It had these like really nice 8-bit, 16-bit sprites or 16-bit sprites. The art was pretty detailed for like 1992 or whatever. And then Mortal Kombat, like I guess looked cool at the time because you had that digitized like appearance, but I think it looks like shit now. So, you know, a legacy created by violence and blood is Mortal Kombat and still going strong 30 years later.
Mm-hmm. Much
pretty interesting.
Much worse movie than the Street Fighter movie, though, or rather than the Mortal Kombat movie. The Street Fighter movie, the one with Jean-Claude Van Damme, bad. Oh. Quite bad.
Atrocious.
Yeah,
movie.
That was like the ultimate, like Raul Julia.
Rest in peace, Raul Julia. That was like his last movie, right?
Rest in peace, not an M. Bison guy.
No.
Like M. Bison's like 6'8". That was the ultimate Hollywood got a hold of something, and it's 1993.
Mario and Luigi.
Yes. So that's Mortal Kombat. Other things on the docket released, by the way. I watched the new To All the Boys on Netflix.
Yeah, no, it's
it's better than the second one, though.
It's better than the second one for sure.
I enjoyed it. I actually, I'm so sick and tired of Noah Centineo.
It's that franchise.
I'm so fucking sick of that guy.
He has overstayed his welcome, and that franchise has really overstayed its welcome. But I think that's from our perspective.
It was a good return to form because the first one was very enjoyable. The first one was a pretty solid rom com. Third one was I had really no issues with the third one. It wasn't great. Second one was dog shit.
Yeah,
Noah Centineo. I'm just
the perfect date. The perfect.
Yeah, what's
kiss.
The name of the what's the name of the lead in that movie?
Wait, which one?
Lana Condor.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, she does a much better job than Noah Centineo. Noah Centineo got cast in like everything over the last 3 years.
Everything. There was a viral tweet where it was like Netflix, like we need a guy for this role, whatever. They go, how about Noah Centineo? Like, yes,
sold,
cast in the role.
She was Lana
Zac Efron's like that used to be me.
Lana Condor did. She was a X-Men, right? She did.
Yeah,
Jubilee.
There's actually a reference in the new To All the Boys. Oh, she writes down. She's writing down movies for Noah Centineo's character, and she writes down X-Men Apocalypse, which she's in, and then she also writes down Shazam, and he's going to be in the parallel side. He's going to be in Black Adam.
I did not forgot that part completely. She was in Alita: Battle Angel.
Did you also? Nice. So we also got screeners. I finally got this. I got to watch. I referenced it the other day. I can say now. I watched. I Care a Lot, the new Rosamund Pike movie, mm-hmm. which is a dark comedy. I love that movie. That's on Netflix, I believe, tomorrow, officially. Otherwise, I wasn't able to say that. But did you watch Silk Road? We got a Silk Road screener today.
Yeah.
I watched half of it before we came in here. I should probably watch it in full. But
that was a pain. That was a big-time pain. I did not like that movie one bit.
The movie makes me really uncomfortable. It's not music uncomfortable, but I was... I don't know. It's odd. But we talked about it. It felt like sensationalism, though, so...
It's just not interesting. It's like they had this story, but they had no way to make it into an intriguing movie.
Directed by Tiller Russell, no relation to Joe Tiller, former Purdue football coach.
Rest in peace to him.
Yeah.
Legend.
Rest in peace. Good mustache.
Yeah. Air Raid. Big Air Raid guy.
Mm-hmm. How about Cruella? Next thing on the docket. Cruella, the prequel to 101. I don't know which it's a prequel to. I think it's a prequel to the Glenn Close 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah.
Not the... So that was 101. Mm-hmm. That was 101 Dalmatians, like numbers. The live action was 101, I think. I said that completely fucking backwards. The cartoon was like spelled out 101. What do you think about Cruella? We liked the pictures when this first was teased. This is exactly the vibe they said it would be. And it's Emma Stone. Like, I think out of anything, Emma Stone just kind of gets like, the pat, like, not the pass is the right word, but like, I give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I kind of expect this to be like a decent attempt, and I like that it's something different.
I'm proud that I'm, because I'm not usually ahead of the game on making comparisons on stuff like this. The second the trailer dropped, I quote tweeted with, "This is just PG Harley Quinn," and that was like, then like, oh, it's PG Harley Quinn, it's PG Joker. So I'm very happy to be a little bit ahead of the curve on that, but I think that is the biggest problem. For this trailer, is just it is vibe jacking those movies, which is like no fault to like I feel like it's hard to blame them for that, especially since Cruella as a character predates at the very least for sure Harley Quinn, not so much Joker, but I don't know. I'm with you, Jeff, in that I give Emma Stone complete benefit of the doubt, and also the director Craig Gillespie, the guy who did I, Tonya, and he did something else that I really like Mars and the Real Girl. He obviously I think knows how to direct I would say setting based things. It's not like a period piece, you know what I'm talking about. He's good at that. He's good at working with great female leads. I think he's good at doing like kind of comedy dark shit, and I don't know. I trust him.
He did the prequel to Trouble with the Curve, Million Dollar Arm. John Hamm grows up.
John Hamm, baby.
Character. Trill, what did you think of the trailer?
Yeah, I thought it was fine. It was what I expected. I don't know if it's going to be good or not. I do think do you think the general public really likes a good like, oh, you thought this character was bad? Well, guess what? Like, there's either a reason why or they're not that bad, which probably has been around forever. But when I first kind of noticed it taking off in terms of people loving it, was Wicked. So like when people say it's like the Joker, it's like, I think you can draw a lot of parallels to the Joker. And I certainly would be shocked if they didn't crib a little bit from the Joker. Just based on how successful the Joker was. But I think the general trend of like people wanting to absorb content about like, you know, existing IPs seen through the eyes of the antagonist, you know, it goes through like Maleficent and it goes to mm-hmm. Wicked and it goes to like a lot of different other things. So
Descendants really kind of did that sort of same vibe, right? You ever watch that? I feel like it's a kid.
Yeah, I watched that with my daughter. She liked it. I mean, she doesn't know what's going on, but she dances and they sing.
Good songs.
And yeah, it's another way to stretch out your IP, right? It's like what mm-hmm. it comes
exactly.
down to.
At least if you're going to do it, right? Do it like this. Like that's what I think.
Yeah.
Semi-original.
You're going to do it anyway, so...
Like I would rather see like this than another like straight up 101 Dalmatians remake where Paul Bettany plays the
Hugh
guy. And, no, Hugh Laurie's too old and
the Hugh Laurie character from the 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, the Hugh Laurie character.
And then it was Ron's
and
dad.
Then,
I forget.
Rose Byrne plays the lady, and then like you know just repeat. Ad nauseum. So like at least this is attempt to do something different, but it is heavily derivative of other popular works of art, as a lot of things are. I don't know if it's going to be like you know, I don't know if it's going to be great. It'll probably be entertaining just because I like Emma Stone. A lot of these things are based upon the IP, and a lot of them are based upon the actors. So you get that merge of the IP and you get that merge of the actor, and you got yourself something that's probably not going to dip below 70% on Rotten Tomatoes. And then everybody is going to forget about it 6 days after it's released, after everybody discusses it for 6 days, and then nobody ever talks about it again.
Did you notice that the logo for Cruella looks like weirdly similar to Mulan's?
Very.
Extremely
similar. Brushstroke look.
Brushstroke red, that same like crimson and everything. I only just thought about this in my head now, but like it does look very similar. I don't know. Again, I just benefit of the doubt for them.
I just saw where they like did a circle on the cruel, like you weren't picking up on.
Just in case. Like, whitewashing for a lady that skins dogs.
And then they will not be recasting the role of Cara Dune in The Mandalorian. Obviously, Gina Carano fired over that on Sunday, and then which I don't think it was necessary to recast that role. I think that was a character they almost basically wrote out of the last season.
The show kind of left itself open for like whole new arc.
Yep.
So, you know, it's like the same thing with like Avatar, the Last Airbender. Is like you had three separate arcs, and then you know you had characters that stuck around like Toph. But they just, you know, had some characters that weren't in some arcs. So,
talk.
it was a breaking point. What's that?
I love that Avatar talk. I love the Avatar talk.
Well, I mean, Avatar is the prime example of like serialized storytelling in my mind.
You know, that's Dave Filoni too. Dave Filoni also did Avatar as well as obviously Mandalorian.
That's right. And then Rian Johnson's trilogy is still on, which that didn't surprise me. No one ever said it was off.
Nope, not one.
that's just a classic. Like, no one said it was not happening.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Rian Johnson, I would just keep delaying it. It's the specter of the Rian Johnson trilogy is more interesting than the actual thing.
He'll come out with Knives Out 2. It's going to be fucking great. And then people are going to be like, oh, why don't Rian Johnson do Star Wars? And then people will be, maybe not.
Because the discussion around it is way more interesting to most people than the actual like movies would probably be.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Rian Johnson fracture in the freaking fan base of Star Wars gives people more like hours of entertainment, like a fucking yarn ball in front of a baby kitten, than they can possibly imagine. And the second those movies are released, they're probably gonna be fine. Then being a little Debbie Downer in the last 5 minutes, I need to take a chill pill.
No, here we go. This is definitely positive. It's positive. Rian Johnson is a good director. He's made very, very good movies, I think, especially if you look at Knives Out. I think he can work with sci-fi if you look at Looper. I think, and even like smaller things like Brick. Like, I think that's like, what, his first or second movie or something? The dude can direct. And I think if you look at the history just of Disney as of right now, of Star Wars, I think they're kind of realizing, at least to a point, that the more studio influence that there is, the worse the movie becomes, especially when you have directors that are very passionate and don't like to work around like a crazy amount of like red tape in that regard. So I think that hopefully they would learn their lesson there and just kind of let him cook. You know what I mean? Like let him make his own trilogy that is cohesive, that has three connecting storylines, which is what the last trilogy was really missing, and just make his own thing. And I guarantee it would be very good.
I'm cool with it. I'm excited for it. That's why someone's like, what's your thoughts? Like, I don't have thoughts. It was never off. I liked it the whole time. This episode brought to you in part also by MovieRankings.net.
That's right.
How about that?
Did you type it in yet, you listener?
Go to that website. We don't have a mobile app for it, and we're not going to because there's $0 behind this. I just want to note that. Zero.
In fact, it's negative dollars because we pay for it.
It's $0. So, no, there won't be an app right now, but if you have an iPhone, if you go to Safari, you can make it a homepage app, and it goes right to the website, because it was built beautifully in a way that it works on mobile. Let us know any movies missing. Like, I try to add movies all the time. We're adding in, finally, Bollywood movies. Ken Jack wrote in there. We're almost up to 5,000 movies now on here. There's other websites that show you where things are streaming. Yeah, sure, but not with the filtration that you can find on MovieRankings.net. Not by rating, not by runtime, awards. Decade, year. You're not going to find decade, year anywhere like that. Like, you can maybe find year, but not decade. You're not going to find decade with genre and then subgenre.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing at MovieRankings.net, what we did was most movies are bucketed into just one genre. You go to IMDb, a movie's got like 10 fucking genres. So if you click comedy, it's a bunch of movies that you wouldn't consider comedy.
All those websites, you need to know what you're looking for before you go there. You could go to movierankings.net with a blank slate, have no idea what you want to watch, and you can find something that you're going to watch very quickly.
You sort best comedies, you're going to get movies that you're going to barely consider a comedy. On ours, you'll get in the top Monty Python, Superbad, Caddyshack. You'll get Life of Brian, 21 Jump Street. You're going to get comedies. They'll be dark. They'll be, you know, whatever. That type of comedy. You'll have to go filter from there. But again, you have very refined filtration on our website. Same with subgenre. You want to find heist movies, romantic comedies, coming-of-age movies, courtroom movies, cooking movies, mall cop movies, directors, thousands of directors. You can filter. If you just want to see what all the A24 movies are, bang. All the Disney, bang. Marvel, Neon, Universal Pictures. Universes, Star Wars, Bourne, James Bond, Judd Apatow, Rocky, Star Trek, Harry Potter, American Pie Trilogy, characters, Batman. You want to see every movie Batman's ever been in, Spider-Man, all sports. So it's, we're very proud of it. It's the fucking best thing. And you know what? Maybe one day it'll be even bigger. We'll see. Not sure yet.
Go visit it. That's the best way to make it that way.
We are going to put, there's going to be a user ability to log what movies you want to watch, a watch list. Again, don't have the backing, and we have to kind of move over to a different server to do that. So we need to continue to, build those things out. But again, great way to find a movie, poke around, see what we rated things, yell at us. Yell at us with context, though, please.
Yes, tell us.
I will
wrong.
Always engage on a movie that you disagree with a score, as long as you have a little, like, just a little bit of, like a human touch to it. Open it up to a discussion, not just be like, you're a fucking idiot. Otherwise, I'll reply to you every time. I love it. A good movie discussion. But go to movierankings.net and tell us anything you'd want to see movie-wise on there. Because there's some things I forget. We did it all manually. That's why it is the way it is. Because we did everything absolutely by hand. It took months. Movierankings.net. Big push today. A couple other small notes. Danny Elfman is going to do the Doctor Strange 2 soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Dun, 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 dun. It just reminds me of the Family Guy bit.
Yeah, it does. It kills
Danny Elfman. John Williams is dead. We got to finish with Danny Elfman.
Paddington 3 in development. Trill, that's got to get you excited. The Marmalade.
Oh, you mean, Paddington's got to go to space, baby.
They're literally going to shoot him into space, too, like a CGI bear.
So, Paddington, you get into this cannon, and you know, I'm gonna use my pipe, and I'm gonna light the cannon.
Okay. I don't know why I sound like Winnie the Pooh, but I'm going to get into this cannon.
It's similar universes.
And then they shoot his ass into space. I like Paddington, though.
Shoot his ass into space.
Got to do the Paddington 3. Got to be a trilogy.
I'm not saying it's an all-time quote on this show, but I do like just you saying, shoot his ass into space. That's you. You're like the executive at the meeting.
His little furry ass.
BBC. Just shoot his ass into space this time.
Just that little troublemaker needs to go to space ASAP. Get him and his wellies up on the moon. Him just giving, shivering.
Giving marmalade on toast to the xenomorph.
This next thing, this is a video. I haven't watched it. I'm going to turn it up and put it by the microphone because we can't share video. It's the cast and crew explain why Tom and Jerry needed to retain their 2D looks in their new movie, which is interesting to me because that almost sounds like an odd excuse. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play it. I'm going to hear what they say. And then we'll discuss.
Tom and Jerry are literally one of my favorite cartoons. It was important to have the animated characters be in 2D because the classic cartoons were in 2D. We could actually have them look exactly like they always did, but at the same time live in the 3D world. They're still going to be somewhat 2D, which is really cool. We thought it was the best way to give homage to what the cartoons have always been.
What I improv and what I do physically allows them to be able to animate even more.
I'm sorry, he's a little animated. Animation and real people collide in a very exciting way.
This movie synthesizes these elements in a cartoon that I grew up on and loved.
There's a certain charm to Tom and Jerry. Just make you smile.
It's really decadent to watch. It's a fun world.
All right, that's coming to HBO Max. What do we think about the explanation there? Does it sound like they were just like, I don't really want to do 3D. I don't really want to do live action.
it's not worth just, doing just, any just, of that.
Should we just do the 2D flat cartoons?
Yeah. They just look better. They just look better in 2D, though.
They do. No, I agree. I was curious. Yeah.
I feel like I just don't give a shit about this, and not because I hate Tom and Jerry, because I don't. I had an affection for it when I was a kid, but I don't care. I don't care for this movie very much.
Yeah. Well, I just hear them. It's one of those things where, like, we talked about it before. It was like, imagine you're working on a movie and it's your life for 2 years. You're just obsessed with the work you do. You put every ounce of blood, sweat, and tears into it, and you're just working like 80 hours a week, rendering 15 seconds for 3 years or something like that. And then it comes out, and then, like, you have idiots like us. You're like, Tom should have farted on Jerry's teeth or something like that. That would have been funny. So it's like hearing them talk and saying, like, it's the perfect synthesis of the Tom and Jerry brand when we get them together and their core values. They establish a few different differentiating characteristics of both Tom and Jerry together. And we think you're going to be very surprised with this film. And hearing that, it's like, it's a Tom and Jerry movie. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a cat and a mouse. They don't like each other, and they sometimes like each other. That's all I want out of it. I don't need to hear your brand speak with it.
No, that's not all we want out of it. We want very specifically Tom to smoke Jerry like a cigarette or whatever it was. No, he's the lighter. We want him to light up and smoke a big old spliff and just use Jerry as the lighter. We are very, very pointed in that demand.
Split his ass open and smoke him.
Mm-hmm. We need that. And him to say howdy to the lady cowboy cat that runs off with the cool cat. What was the cool cat's name in Tom and Jerry? That Tom also hated. It wasn't not the pit bull.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, man.
You're not up on your Tom and Jerry trivia?
Not a big Tom.
Casanova cat. Oh yeah. Fuck that guy. Fuck that dude. Tom and Jerry, great source of memes though over recent time.
And then lastly, Young Rock. Did anyone watch it?
I didn't get a chance to. I was too busy on term on a Tuesday to commit to both rock
brands.
A lot
of people saying they think it's going to be a kickoff to his presidential campaign.
Were people saying that?
Yeah, that's a couple stories. And it was like Screen Rant said it, but a couple other places said it as well. People were kind of chattering like, this looks like this is people. I think you said that.
Didn't I say that 6 months ago?
Yeah. No, you did.
All right. Well, there's no virtue in being right. But yeah, I mean, this is like the new version of releasing like
an autobiography like Obama did.
Yeah. I mean, this is just the better version of doing that if you want to get, you know, people interested in you.
And he said, right, like somebody asked him like, oh, would you want to run for president? And he did the classic kind of like cop-out move where he's just like, yeah, if the people want me to. The second you say the people, like you're pretty much confirming yes. And he's been all about the people for years, obviously. He's the people's elbow. He's the people's champ, like. But still, you know what I mean? I think he's gearing up.
I think he'll do a governor run.
Probably have to do that. No, you don't have to do that first. But
who's the modern day Gray Davis for him to unseat? Imagine he just unseats Ted Cruz or something and just becomes governor of
Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, I mean, I could. Yeah.
True. Becomes Senator Rock.
Gavin Newsom's not very popular right now.
No one seems to like
him. No, but
him.
I think he would. But is The Rock like? I don't even know what his primary residence. I don't know what it matters.
Governor,
I
mean, Rock. He would be Johnson. He likes to go by Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, he doesn't really like Rock anymore. No,
he's not a The Rock guy. But
it's still his handle on everything.
And you know,
maybe don't name your show Young Rock.
I mean, he sees where the money goes. But like personally, he likes DJ or Dwayne Johnson.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him because
DJ
that's
ain't
like,
happening.
No, that's just now. He's never going to catch on.
But you think about, like, here's one thing I do admire about him is, like, you got to, like, work really hard to, like, remove. I mean, and I think professional wrestling is great, but, like, the public, they see a professional wrestler as a professional wrestler forever, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, if they try acting, it's like, you know, it's a novelty thing, like with John Cena. It's like, oh, it's John Cena from the WWE. And then if you become a good enough actor and you're ubiquitous enough, then like you kind of get, you know, The Rock's morphed in that territory where it's like he used to be a wrestler rather than he's a wrestler who acts. I don't think there's anything wrong with being a wrestler. I'm just saying, like, it's I mean, watch, like, Money Plane's a perfect example, right? Is like one of the key things of that movie was the fact that Edge was in it.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at a list right now on shortlist.com. It's the nicknames that The Rock has claimed to have had at one point. He said he used to be called SmackDown, was my nickname in college, parentheses, in the bedroom. And he said to someone from BuzzFeed, FYI, Fun AF was my nickname in college. There's just no fucking chance.
Fun AF.
There's no chance in 1999. Like, what year did he graduate college? Like 1990?
No, he'd be like 80. It was like, you know. When
I was
going to
say
it,
like 91.
92. 89 or something like that.
There's no fucking chance. There's absolutely no chance that was his nickname. He said he got called Utterly Delightful in college. Free and Epic. Everyone said Epic in the early 90s and late 80s, right? Mocha Fap was my nickname in college. He's claimed so many times to have different nicknames in college.
Yeah, but here's
Laser?
The thing with The Rock. Here's the thing with The Rock, and here's why he'd be a good politician. Because everyone who reads that or hears him talk about that, it's like, yeah, it probably didn't happen, but it sounds really good coming out of your mouth.
Yeah. I think this might just be a bit by him. Completely unhinged was one.
Hey, you gotta hand it to Dwayne Johnson for his TV show Young Rock.
Sponsored by Tamarana Tuesdays. Doesn't he drink Tamarana in the first episode? Someone tweeted us that. It might be a lie. I have no idea.
I mean, I would be more surprised if Tamarana did not make it into that show.
He's gonna have a childhood friend named Tamarana. That's like,
yes.
Yeah.
Tamarana, what's your favorite day of the week?
Chuck Tamarana. All right.
That's when I got the idea that I would sit on for 35 more years.
His name is Tamarana.
Fuck. All right, Michael K. Williams. Ken Jack interviewed him.
Very pleasant man.
That was nice. Here it is.
Today, I am super, super pumped to bring to you Michael K. Williams. Michael, how are you?
I'm good. Yourself, man. How you doing?
We're surviving. I think we're both in New Jersey right now, just working around the snow. And we were just talking off camera about how we're just excited for the snowstorm to hit us tomorrow again, and that hopefully that's the last of it for the season.
Yeah, we're on the other side of this particular season, hopefully, you know. But then again, it has been known to snow in April. So, like Prince said, we just fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed, man. You are here today to talk to us about Body Brokers. Just to give you all a quick synopsis, brought to Los Angeles for treatment, a recovering junkie soon learns that the rehab center is not about helping people. It's merely a cover for a multi-billion dollar fraud operation that enlists addicts to recruit other addicts. It's in theaters and on digital and on demand on February 19th, 2021. That's the Wikipedia synopsis, but give me your synopsis and your pitch for this movie.
Body Brokers to me is a perfect example of capitalism gone awry. And oddly enough, it looks very familiar to another scenario of capitalism gone awry. We call it the for-profit prison systems. Mm. You know, when did we stop calling it the correctional facility to prisons? And the same mindset, the same narrative that changed it from correctional facility to prisons are the same narratives or the same mindset that exploits people in their addiction. You know, it's more about filling the beds than it is actually helping people. But there's something about Body Brokers, the story of taking advantage of people, you know, in their sickness. I subscribe to the narrative that addiction is a sickness. It's not something that people chose to do. People don't wake up and say, I'm going to be the best crackhead or dope fiend or alcoholic that I can be. Those are symptoms of a deeper problem, of a deeper issue. You know, same as mass incarceration, but it's just this thing of taking advantage of people in their addiction. It's deplorable, in my opinion.
So I have a friend who works in treatment facilities, and I remember years ago her telling me about the sort of like the patient brokerage sort of system, and how at that point I think there was like a big fraud scandal somewhere else in the country. And I remember thinking, like, how is this not getting coverage? Because it's insane. It's like they're preying on some of the most vulnerable people in society. And for someone who's grown up in addiction in the household, like, I know like how vulnerable these people can be. And like, it's just so, like you said, deplorable and gross. And to me, that's immediately what like struck out to me, is like, just this is going to be like an interesting movie. And for you, maybe when you were pitched this movie, what made you want to be involved in it?
It's no secret that I'm in recovery. So this story is very close to my heart for the obvious reasons. You know, I sit in bed now and I look at these, you know, when you can't sleep, but I can't sleep at night and I wake up, you know, turn the TV on and you see these are commercials about these gorgeous facilities in you know, Malibu or wherever. And I when I was in active addiction, I remember looking at these commercials as a sign of hope, or like maybe, you know, like I could get my life together if I just could go there. And, you know, they make me sick to my stomach now. I look at them and I laugh. It's just like, are you serious? Body Broke is really, it took the wool over the, from off my eyes, man, and was able to help me see. So another thing that drew me to this story is the character of Wood. A lot of times, you know, from my experience, when we look at stories or narratives from Hollywood that talk about the addict experience or the recovering addict experiences, all the emphasis is based on what people did when they were on their drug and alcohol, or, you know, if you call it on a run. And we never see the other side. The other side of it for me is that, you know, drugs and alcohol is not the problem. Drugs and alcohol are symptoms of the problem. And just because a person puts down their drug of choice doesn't mean that all their problems go away and they're fixed. What it actually means is, to me, is that that's when the real work begins, when you start to do the inside job and you start to work on yourself. Just because Wood put down the drugs doesn't mean all his character defects went away and all of a sudden his moral compass is you know, automatically balanced. That takes time, that takes effort, and that takes work. If you hear Melissa Leo's character tell Jack's character, you know, this takes time. You know, this takes time. This is not an overnight process. You know, just don't snap your fingers and put the drug down. You know, all that stinking thinking, as we call it, goes away. So, you know, Wood is a perfect example of the road to recovery. There's no straight road, and no two roads are the same. And Wood is an addict that put down his drug, and now we see his character defects. You know, he's not suppressing it with the drugs or the alcohol. Now we see exactly who he is. And, you know, there are some good traits about him. I like the, you know, his salesman mentality is, you know, it's to me, that's a good thing. I'm not anti-capitalism. I'm just, you know, I'm anti-capitalism when it exploits people to the depths of the story that we see in Body Brokers, you know. But Wood is a perfect example. He's a good view of what recovery looks like. It's messy. It's sloppy. It's far from perfect. I was grateful to have a chance to explore that aspect of what recovery looks like to an individual.
I love that comparison you made of how it's kind of similar to the prison system, because it really is, and how it isn't really about correctional, like you're saying, like they changed it from correctional facilities to prison. It's not really, they don't care about the correction, right? Especially in a lot of rehab facilities, it is about, you know, getting that, you know, certain amount of money out of each person and filling those beds and stuff. And I do think that is interesting to see, just not necessarily like a takedown, but sort of a deeper look behind the veil of like rehab centers, because it's, a lot of them did that. And only recently have like patient brokering been declared illegal across certain different states. I know here in New Jersey, even it's not a totally 100% like illegal yet. It's just like they have, you know, disincentives against it and stuff, but it's a disgusting practice. And I really like seeing it just getting more exposure out in the world. In this movie, it's going to be in theaters and on demand. How do you feel as an actor about the same day release kind of process we're now moving into?
You know, I tend to go with the flow. It's a whole new world out there. COVID has, you know, leveled the playing field in a lot of different ways, and it has forced Hollywood to reinvent itself. I think it's change is good. Who am I to say? I we got to go with the flow. I can't control this thing. This is happening. This train is moving, and I think it's best to get on board and try to make it work the best way we can. You know, me personally, the going to the movie theater experience has started to lose its luster before COVID for a number of reasons. It had nothing to do, because I'm in the business of entertainment. It had nothing to do with that. I'd been going to movies long after I started working as an actor. Something started to lose its luster. The experience of going to the theater became a, like, oh God, I gotta put on clothes. I gotta sit in these uncomfortable chairs. you know, I find that if I didn't go to the theater in the matinee, I was usually the first one snoring at the, you know what I mean? Maybe it's an age thing. I don't know. But I kind of like the, I like the idea of being able to sit in the comfort of my home, the safety of my home, and watch what I want to watch when I want to watch it. Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I'm not opposed. Not taking nothing away from the theater experience either for people that still enjoy that. I do like this new direction of where we're going.
You don't miss stepping on the sticky floors. I don't blame you. We recently interviewed Joel Kinnaman, and I remember we talked to him about it, and he was really upset that Suicide Squad was going to streaming the same day that it was going to theater. And I think for big, like AV entertainment value, like movies like that, where like you're really paying for that experience, like that really stinks. But I think for movies that are maybe even more intimate, like this, like it kind of removes that sort of like barrier to entry where like, oh, and I, like you were saying, I have to go get dressed. I need to go put on shit and go to the movie theater to watch this. I can just watch it in the comfort of my own home and maybe hear about a story that I would have otherwise never seen. And to me, I think that it's helpful for a story like this. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's how I go.
I tend to agree with you a little bit. And you know, and I understand what, you know, Joel Kinnaman, I consider him a friend, a colleague. I do understand, you know, those big, you know, IMAX, you know, the room is rumbling at the sound, you know, there's something to be missed about that. You know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I don't enjoy the good Marvel experience and an IMAX or, you know, I don't know. I just, I turn my volume up loud enough, you know, I can pretend. I got a dope little sound bar in here, you know, but yeah. I like being home.
Yeah, I need to just make sure when Godzilla vs. Kong comes out, I just don't watch it on this crusty MacBook and I watch it on my TV instead. Yeah.
You gotta watch it on TV. Now that you can't, you gotta watch that on the TV, bro. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So moving from movies and the TV a little bit, because obviously we have a lot of our fan base really loves you from The Wire and many other shows, but I'd love to talk about The Wire quick. HBO obviously has a very big catalog of shows that many would consider just the best shows ever, and also would include some of the best characters ever. And not only is The Wire at the top of like the best shows ever list, but Omar Little and your portrayal of him is considered one of the best ever as well. How taxing was that role for you? Because, you know, obviously you've done interviews before about how what you were going through personally during the time and how that was difficult, but I'm sure even beyond that, just kind of performing that role of such a complicated and three-dimensional character was even, like, I would assume, hard as well.
The Wire was definitely it was hard work. It was hard lift, heavy lifting. I would say the main thing that was difficult for me, because you know, that was my breakout role. That was the first time I'd done a reoccurring character, and for him to be so complex, you know, I got lost in the sauce a little bit. You know, my childhood, I grew up, I was the corny kid. I was very soft. I got, you know, I was nothing like the portrayal of what you see in Omar, like polar opposite. When I started getting the love, particularly from my community, for the character of Omar, it was, you know, I lost my footing a little bit. And, you know, 7 out of 10 people are calling me Omar. And I started to become okay with that. And it was like, okay, you know, well, who cares? Omar, Michael, who gives a shit, right? You know, and that was, I got away from myself. And when the show ended, I had a lot of growing up to do, a lot of healing. One is I didn't want the experience to stop. I'd never done a show that long, anything that long, that one thing that long. And when The Wire was coming to the end, I felt like that was my life going with it. I didn't want to, you know, turn in my Superman cape, because in a lot of ways, Omar, the character of Omar, that trench coat, was like my Superman cape. I didn't want to turn that in. I enjoyed the accolades I got in my community and the perks, to be transparent. Everything, you know, it was at the end of that show, I was in such a screwed up mental space that I preferred being in Omar's life than my own. And that was a dangerous place for someone like me. with my past. And that was one of the hardest things I had to do was put Omar to bed, was release him. It was one of the hardest things I had to do.
It's interesting you say that. Did you feel like the expectations were getting higher as the seasons went on? Because if you were getting obviously all this love within your community and so many people now, I guess you were saying, recognizing you as Omar and how like transcendent sort of that character was in, I guess, pop culture at that time. Like, was the expectation, I guess, going higher and like just becoming exceptional or exponentially larger as the seasons went on?
The only expectations that I was having was how do I keep this facade going on? At one point, it was, you know, I didn't want people to know that I preferred Omar's life over mine. That was the expectation. It was the expectation of, it was on me. What do I do with myself when this is over, when this is done? The character, the arc of the character, I didn't worry about that. I knew I was in amazing hands with David Simon and Ed Burns, Nina Noble, the rest of the writers. I was in good hands. I had nothing to worry about. That was not my lane to worry about, you know, how do I top the last scene that I did? Once they put it on the script, I was completely at peace with it. You know, it was, the expectations was put on, I put on myself on a personal note.
How much of a bragging point is it to you that you're President Obama's favorite character? I mean, that's awesome. That has to be a great, great feeling.
That was actually one of the most intimidating experiences I had felt in my life. That scared the living shit out of me, to be frank. When President Obama singled me out, I was not living my best life. I was extremely ignorant to the process of how things work, the system works. At that point in my life, I was a grown man thinking and believing that my voice didn't matter. Who's really, nobody sees me, you know, nobody, you know, okay, you know, which exasperated my need to be Omar even more. That's the first time I felt seen. And so when President Obama shouted me out, I was like, oh, snap. They're like, the president, I did something to warrant the attention of the president of the United States, and it didn't involve federal prison time. Like, how did this happen? You know what I'm saying? Like, so that was frightening. And then I had to look at the reality that I hadn't done shit. I was still a child in my mind. I hadn't grown up. I hadn't gotten responsible for my voice in the community, you know, things of that nature. What was I doing with this platform, with this blessing, this second chance at life, really, that was given to me? And I was like, wait a minute. The future president of the free world is watching The Wire. Well, maybe you need to watch him, Michael, and take an interest in what he's doing and who he is and what he believes in. And what does the word policy mean? Like, I was, you know, I had never, Obama was the second, I was well over 18 in 2008. And Obama was the second time I had voted in a presidency election or any executive election. Didn't give two shits, whether the mayor, nothing. I just didn't care. I didn't think that I mattered. And I just didn't care. And President Obama made me care. He made me listen, and he made me get involved. That was a frightening thing to do. It was frightening to have that come all at once to me as a shout out from the President of the United States. That's intimidating. But I was grateful for that. It put me it changed the trajectory of my path on a personal level as a, you know, the Black man from East Flatbush, Brooklyn. It wasn't about, you know, getting to know him or, you know, getting his cell phone number. I just, that for me, that wasn't what it was about. It was about me listening to him and finding out how can I be of service to, how can I do this alkylate this game? How can I do this service? And for me, it was listening. And, you know, I learned from listening to him, you know, that real change happens on the local level. you know, I've got to get back in my community and find out who my local politicians are, who my councilmen are, and who my borough presidents are. I learned that from, you know, Yes We Can. You know, it's a we thing. And not, you know, it's just, I can go on and on and on, but those are the basics that I got from that one shout out. That was my experience.
That's kind of cool. Do you think it was almost like a domino effect? Because him sort of, because like, the way you're describing it is, it's like almost like a social awakening, right? Or I guess, yeah, sort of. So like him saying that to you, and then all the people you've, I'm assuming since then, have influenced to then more get involved in their own communities and their own just day-to-day politics, I would guess. It's cool. It's like a little domino effect for positive change.
I would say a huge domino effect for positive change. And it's not so, you know, politics, that's a tricky word for me. I tend to stay away from that, the P word. For me, it's about self-worth, self-value, knowing that our voice counts, knowing that we have power as a community. I'm not the only one that comes from a community that looks like mine, that thinks that no one is watching and no one is listening and our voice doesn't matter. I doubt seriously that I'm the only one that feels like that. So for me, it was about going back to my community and changing that narrative. We're more powerful than we know together. And we have a voice together and we can make change together. You know, and it starts at home. Like, don't worry about what they're doing. Start here at home right now. What can we do as a community? And it was more, that was more important for me than politics, I guess.
I want to talk quickly about another show in which you were part of, like, I would say, a pretty important and underrepresented community, and that would be Boardwalk Empire, where you played Chalky White, and you, I think your performance in that was incredible, and I think that Boardwalk Empire doesn't get, I would say, the mainstream shine it deserves. It got 57 Emmy nominations, which is insane, but I don't think it got the main broad appeal, because when you ask a lot of people, like, what is your favorite HBO show, they'll usually say, like, you know, Sopranos, they'll say The Wire, and then Boardwalk Empire, I feel like, never cracks that top three for so many people, even though anyone who I've known who's seen it, they'll put it in the top three. And I don't quite get why, because it is so fantastic. But the main question I wanted to guess is, it has 57 Emmy nominations. Why do you think it got a warmer reception compared to The Wire from the Television Academy?
Had a lot of, like, famous white people on it, for one, you know, starting with, you know, Martin Scorsese, you know, Mark Wahlberg, executive producers, you know, Terry Winter from, you know, showrunner on Sopranos, you know, Steve Buscemi, and a lot of powerful white people that were behind Boardwalk Empire. And with a lot of powerful, you know, famous white people comes a lot of money. The Wire was the little engine that could. And we were also ahead of, The Wire was ahead of its time.
Yes.
The Wire was the first show that I remember calling in our era, this era, that I remember calling a novel TV. The show didn't wrap up in a nice little bow at the end of the hour. You know, the characters were not black and white, they were gray. One of the main things I loved about The Wire, they didn't score anything. Like, there was no, like, you know, cue the violins, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, beat the drums for the tension, you know, they're about to fight. You know, there was just, it looked like this voyeuristic view. It almost looked like a docuseries. And if you heard music in the scene, that's because there was a radio on the sidewalk, or you had a boombox outside in the project. So it was real. There was nothing that was driving your emotions. You know, what you felt, what you saw was what it claimed to be. And, you know, I remember David Simon saying he remembers when Hollywood, there was a narrative in Hollywood, you know, right before The Wire came, like, where are all the black actors? And David Simon said, here they go. And, you know, Hollywood said, no, we're not talking about these little guys and girls you picked up off the street. We're talking about, you know, the actors. Like, where are they? There were a lot of, you know, there was a lot of streets, a lot of talk off the streets that people actually thought that we just picked up off the street, you know. And yeah, some of us were, you know, ain't nothing wrong with that. We all got to start somewhere, but that wasn't, you know, we worked hard is what I'm trying to say. Actually, people studied, people worked. I mean, we studied the craft, the newcomers, you know, Robert Chu, who played Proposition Joe. He's God bless his soul. He's gone. He's passed on. He was such a nurturer. Like any young actor, whether young in your experience as a thespian or young in age or both, he would tutor you. He would he had class. He gave so much of himself. That was the type of the atmosphere that was on The Wire, man. We ran lines with each other. It was an actor's workshop. And I'm so sorry. We worked hard.
No, it's
I'm sorry. We worked hard. So, you know, for a lot of those reasons, I think The Wire missed its mark. And, you know, and going back to the money, you know, I can't prove this, but there was another, you know, room on the streets that the budget for one Soprano episode was the budget for one season of The Wire. That was
not doubt that one bit.
So, you know, but yeah, we were the little engine that could, and I think we did. I think we changed a lot of narrative about the Black experience in America, about, you know, what is socially wrong in this country, the way David and Ed and Nina, you know, told stories, the way they shaped their narrative. I don't think that had ever been done before The Wire.
It's an incredible show, and if Boardwalk Empire had 57 Emmy nominations, immediately off my head, I would have assumed that The Wire had like 150. But one last question before we go. We want to talk a little bit about Solo, just because we had a lot of people, I think from at least our fan base, that are interested to know more about the Lord and Miller version. You were obviously the original Dryden Voss, but had to be recast after the reshoots. What can you tell us, if you have seen Solo, what was different about the Lord and Miller version compared to the Ron Howard version?
I didn't see the Ron Howard version, but I know what I left on the table when I had rapped. And I just want to give a shout out to Ali Schumer. I believe her name was. She was one of the producers on the Han Solo project. She's passed on. She was she was a force. She was really something special. She was a huge reason I got the gig. And what we wanted for the character, I forget the name of the character right now. What we had set out to do, I believe that was accomplished. And I left London feeling extremely proud what I had left on the table in, as a character. I will say from what I heard from the video village is that, you know, it was a creative difference. You know, Lord and Miller, what they were, their vernacular, the way that they approached narrative, it didn't fit the mold of the franchise, what Star Wars was known for. And I believe that became the issue. It wasn't any type of, I never saw like negativity or like arguments. It was just a creative differences. They had a certain view. They were, you know, these guys did, you know, the Legos movie, which huge fan of, and that's what they do. And at the end of the day, I just don't think that their road that they took in regards to the story and how they developed the character, how the characters developed under their tutelage, it agreed with the Star Wars franchise. And so they just, they agreed to disagree. They had called me back to do the reshoots, but I was already in South Africa working on Red Sea Diving Resort. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see the Ron Howard version, but I will say I was extremely, extremely proud of the Lord and Miller version that I had created with them, the version of the character that I created. Yeah, you can't tell me nothing about what I left. I know what I left, and it was, I thought it was beautiful.
Well, hey, they just announced that Rian Johnson's he's getting his own trilogy with Star Wars, and that's been resumed. So hopefully maybe you can get a role in there and they can give you let you retool the character back into your own way. Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Make sure everyone listening to go watch Body Brokers. It's in theaters on digital and on demand February 19th. Super excited to watch it. And I'll have you back anytime. Anytime you want to come back. We have an open spot.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you so much. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Thanks, Michael K. Williams. Sorry I couldn't join.
Very
glad that went well.
Very deep conversation. He was very, I don't know that like I go into most interviews expecting that deep of a conversation, but he was extremely, I would say, just, I don't know, a very interesting, very deep man.
Thanks to him. Feel free to pop back on the podcast whenever. Willy's Wonderland. Talking about this wacky-ass movie today. I think we're going to do, I'm going to decide this now. And if you listen to the pod and you ask me what we're reviewing next week, you're not. I'm going to yell at you. What are we going to do? Do we do Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar on Sunday?
I've already seen it. I could do that.
Let's do Barb and Star on Sunday. And then we'll do in the middle of next week, we'll do, I think we're going to do I Care a Lot. And we'll touch a Minari and Nomadland like one more time. But that's what we'll do. So there you go. Don't forget that, people. Willy's Wonderland, though, starring Nick Cage. When his car breaks down, a quiet loner agrees to clean an abandoned family fun center in exchange for repairs. He soon finds himself waging war against possessed animatronic mascots while trapped inside Willy's Wonderland. It kind of explains itself. It has a lot of Five Nights at Freddy's vibe, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's exactly what I thought of. A movie we've talked about a lot, which isn't out yet. I had a very good time with this movie. Like, So this is funny because it has a lot of those like over the top serious things that aren't meant to be taken serious vibes, like Money Plane. And I'm gonna stick to my guns and die on that hill with Money Plane. That I think it was just too much. It was funny. It was amazing. Like it was an amazing watch, but it was like it was too bad. Like it was you're like ah, all right. This I think it knew what it was. I don't think it was as amazing as some people may have propped it up to be initially, and I think the reviews have kind of like leveled out on that from audiences and critics. But it's a fun time. It's not Mandy for me. Like I liked Mandy much more from Nick Cage, but it's weird. I mean, he doesn't fucking say anything. Like
not a word.
He doesn't. It's a different Nick Cage performance.
Does he even have a name? I don't remember him having a name.
But I loved like the horror aesthetics of this movie though. Like I love the sounds. The sound design of the movie was excellent. It was like an ASMR horror movie almost. Mm-hmm. It was a very fun, light, kind of very, like, dark with a little comedy vibe, but horror thing. And I don't know, like, I think if this is the type of movie you like, and I'm not saying Mandy, like, exact, because Mandy was fucking batshit crazy, but, like, if you like Nick Cage, you like some crazier stuff, you like these, like, kind of horror thrillery things, I think Willy's Wonderland is a good thing to go after. It's like a horror comedy, horror thriller. I don't know, I'm kind of in on suggesting this movie. I gave it a 70 out of 100. Like, I kind of think I gave it a higher score than I thought I might have given it going into it because I thought, like, I don't think it's going to live up to any hype. And, yeah, I don't think it was as good as I was hoping it would be. And we can talk about maybe what could have made it possibly better. But I think for what this is, enjoyable. It was enjoyable start to finish. I was satisfied at the end of the movie.
So I think I'll admit off the bat that I had an unfair expectation for this movie, which is, like you mentioned, a lot of people piped this up movie a lot. And I think that's mostly due to just seeing a lot of that hype and just generally positive sentiment around it on social media and just elsewhere. But after seeing it, I think I was a little disappointed. And like, I just don't feel like we got a great usage of Nick Cage to the level where he can be used right. Like, he's obviously in a lot of very shitty movies and ones that are not very crappy. But one thing that you can always give Nick Cage credit for is that he gives 110% in any movie he ever does. Could be a fucking tiny little indie project that makes no money and has a $2 budget, or it could be a giant fucking national treasure. Doesn't matter. He gives 110%. And you get that here for sure because he's very much batshit crazy. After seeing a movie like Mandy and seeing some other stuff more recently that he's done, like, he, I think, can be used better than the way he was used here. I enjoyed it, and it was good for the vibe they were going for. I feel like I left it and I wanted more. And especially, and part of that is just due to this unfair expectation I kind of put on it because of all this positive sentiment. I do think that this movie, like you were saying, knew what it was. I don't think it fully executed correctly. I don't think it was funny enough. I don't think the horror vibes were enough there. It was definitely just, it was goofy horror comedy, which I can get behind. It's just not that good of a movie. And again, I'll say Cage was great.
I saw Chris Del whatever, the Vine star. I always call him Chris Del Chris because of that one fake MagCon meetup picture. And a couple other guys in here were pretty good, some of the other teenage crew. It never really gripped me in a way that I was really wanting it to the entire time because, like, you know what I mean? Like, those expectations, I'm just, like, sitting there. I'm like, okay, when's the moment? Like, when is it going to get me? Like, when am I going to, like, pick up on this and be like, this rocks. This is awesome. And it never really got there, but still an entertaining movie. And I think if you're a horror comedy person, you will probably enjoy this because this is very built towards a specific audience. And it was cool kind of reading about it because the guy who wrote it, I want to say he wrote the idea out. He couldn't sell it. And he put it on this website where I think you put out scripts for horror movies that, like, you can't find. You just can't get the ground running on for anything. And Nick Cage just saw it on that website and was like, I will produce this and I will star in it for you, which is cool. And I like to see that. That's just a cool guy move by Nick Cage.
Trill.
Yeah, I give it a 70. I enjoyed it a lot. It probably could have used more money towards the budget. I think that if there was more money to go into making the movie a little, I think, bigger in scale or more immersive, so to speak, that was my main problem with the movie is I didn't get as immersed in it as I would like.
It runs out a little bit of steam, right? Don't you think? Like, I think it's good. Like, I enjoyed it throughout, and it was, like, the right, like, pacing. But, like, I think, like, maybe the settings and stuff, like, you're like, oh, I feel like we're back here again, or we see the same thing, right? I don't know if that's what you're kind of getting at.
Yeah. Oh, it's just, you know, we talked about it, like, the other movie was, like, Ocean's 8, where I had that gripe where it's, like, the heist wasn't big enough, right? It was, like, claustrophobic. Yes. It was smaller than the heist before that. That movie didn't have an excuse because that's a mainline big budget studio movie. This one, it felt small, but, like, it almost, like, would have been more immersive if it would have been, like, in a grander Chuck E. Cheese type of place. And I get, like, the grit and the griminess is, like, part of the atmosphere. And, like, I think a lot of people perceive these children-centric restaurants to be inherently creepy and gross and disgusting and full of germs. And I thought it did fine, but, like, I don't think there was enough. I don't think it went big enough. And I think part of it was just the fact that they were kind of locked in by what they had. And, like, so what I mean is, like, so while the fights were entertaining, they never kicked it into that other gear that made them truly absurd in a way they needed to be to put this movie over the top. And that was a shame because I felt like they could have gone some places. Like, I don't know, like, you know, if there was, like, you know, fights going into multiple locations or, like, just different, you know, weapons being used, like, in absurd ways and, like, special effects. I don't have any particular recommendations, but, like, it made a lot of it seem like the bathroom fight with the bear or whatever. Like, they just fucking punched a bear and then just stomped him into a urinal. Like, and I guess that's fine from a, like, that's, guess that's fine from a funny point of view, but, like, we just got done a few minutes, like, him taking a split up broomstick to a big ostrich or whatever. And it's absurd, but it's like, I enjoyed that. I would have liked it to go bigger, almost like the chicken sketch from Family Guy. If they just would have wrung it out and made it, like, crazy in the way I wanted it to be, I could have, like, gotten behind it more. But as, like, a B movie horror flick, like, cheap budget horror flick with Nick Cage in it for some reason, like, I thought it was highly enjoyable.
And you know what it kind of reminds me of in a sense? It's almost like what was the Velocipaster that we watched?
Yeah.
Get vibes of that, except it just obviously had more money behind it. I think that the sentiment you just brought up, Trill, the fact that they were kind of, like, stuck in the same locations is very true, not something I kind of picked up on. But it feels like we're either in that main room or just watching him in the kitchen, you know, drinking the energy drink or whatever. And those are, like, the only two real locations we got. And every time he would get into a fight, it was just, like, the animatronic animal was dead in 5 minutes. And, like, not even 5 minutes. It was, like, a minute and a half long fight where he just is, like, the uber good guy playing on easy mode, like, you, just beating the shit out of them. You know, I don't feel like the stakes never felt high enough. I think I gave a score. I gave it a 55, by the way.
I was reading a little bit about it, and I don't know if I picked up when I was, like, watching the movie, but the character made a little more sense to me, like, when I read some, like, theories on Reddit or whatever, and they're talking about, like, just his rituals was kind of like a reverse satanic ritual that like he needed to do in order to expel the demons. And part of that was like following the rules so stringently. Maybe I missed that part if they explained it in the movie, but like when I'm watching it, I'm like, why is this dude so weird? They went back and was like, well, he's like weird because like he's got to take a break. They told him he has to, and he has to follow the rules in order to expel these devil puppets.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just don't feel like he got the same. Like I feel like Velocipastor went full. Like they leaned fully into it, and this kind of didn't.
Yeah, I think maybe could it get away with it though because it had a higher production quality to it. There was a higher value to what they were showing, I guess. And when I say value, I mean in like the obviously
budgetary sense.
Yeah.
Well, I think when you have a person who turns into a dinosaur or whatever it was, you've already put yourself on like a more absurd plane. I mean, and not that like doing a satanic ritual and having your spirit and body transfer over into a Chuck E. Cheese animatronic isn't like absurd, but it's kind of just like a different level of absurd. Like within the horror universe, it's something we've seen before, like Child's Play or whatever, where we've seen that happen. Like that's not like a new concept. Like the only new concept here is that they did the Five Nights at Freddy's thing and kind of put it into a place where I think like a lot of people just find those places inherently creepy, which is fine and it's fun. But like with Velocipastor, here's what I'm thinking. Like, you know, if you had in a bigger place and you had more fights and you like got like, what if there was like more like than just the animatronics? Like, you know, they had a little bit of the ball pit here, but like I would have loved like to see like someone get crushed by like the helicopter scissor lift that they used to have at like Chuck E. Cheese.
Right.
Or like put someone on like one of those like little horses that you put a quarter in, they go back and forth. Like do something like ridiculous that's like more interactive with the concepts of those types of places that we'd be familiar with. Rather than just like, you know, wait for him on the stage. But I did enjoy when we got to it. Like, I mean, you had Nick Cage beating a weasel up with a bag. That was kind of neat.
I love. I mean, the animatronic on the ostrich was pretty good too. They were creepy, and I think that's the main thing. I think like it was sold well because they were horrifying looking, and they moved around well. Like I think the design of the actual creatures added a massive amount to what you were seeing here. Bad creatures would have made this beyond Vlad. This would have made this, for me, again, that territory of like, this is so bad. I know they're trying to be maybe funny, but this is worse. We're at a point where like I actually think it's just garbage, like I said with Money Plane. But no, I thought there was a commitment to certain things to make sure they looked good, and it paid off for sure. Also the mustache of Tex, the guy who owns
the fakest mustache of all time. The world's fakest mustache. Impossibly bad.
I fucking love that mustache so much. That was so funny. Yeah,
those two characters are very funny. I enjoy because those guys went like full Velocipastor, which I really like.
And that's the other thing I liked about them. They weren't in it that much. They were very briefly in the movie. Like the movie didn't hit you over the head with ridiculous people. It had ridiculous things. But I thought it kept the tone relatively light. I think, true, what you said is I think in the beginning it's kind of my biggest thing of like where it lost me. It's like I enjoyed it throughout, but I definitely hit a point halfway through. I'm like, all right, like maybe I'm losing it a touch here. A little bit of this is maybe not as like fresh feeling as it did at the beginning of the movie, which there were clearly some certain restraints on it. Yeah.
Well, but I also think it set out to deliver a familiar horror experience, like a familiar B-level horror experience in terms of there's, you know, five, six kids showing up and like they're all going to get picked off one by one or whatever. And then like, at least one of them's, or at least two of them are going to die having sex.
Oh yeah, no, that's
you know, that stuff was going to happen, and it, you know, it did it. It did it because that's what you do in those sort of things. And it's like, one of the few excuses we'll make for movies where it's like they did the same thing. But it's, you know, when you watch those types of movies, you want them to play the hits, and they did it.
They do. It is. They played. I like the idea of them playing the hits. Just the two murdered teens having sex. That has to be in terms of slasher. That's one of the hits. The murdered teens having sex. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This a lot of the reviews bring up a point that I'm not smart enough to bring up, but it's absolutely correct. A lot of like 80s like B movie slasher vibes. 90s. Yeah. Like it found its type and it fit that type. Maybe it wasn't perfect, but I think people who like these types of movies, especially slashers, are going to have a fun time with it. It's schlocky, not to a fault. Come on, Cammy Chameleon? Tito Turtle? The turtle in Spanish talking about his nuts.
Oh, yeah,
when she was beating the shit out of the turtle in the middle of the road.
Fuck, yeah, I forgot about that.
And Gus Gorilla?
He tries to shoot the shotgun and he like takes out the shells and throws her at her and says something stupid. I forget what.
How about when Wally cuts the sheriff in half at the end of the movie?
That part surprised me enough where I was like oh, yeah. If I was in the theater, I would have given in to cheer because that character is annoying as hell.
Just cuts her in half. I mean, there's also not a ton to say about this. I don't know where we'd go down. But like, what do we think? Like, Nick Cage in general, though. Like, I got mine in Ken Jack's Nick Cage combined rankings up here. And there's obviously like a clear point with all of his movies. So at the top, our top six movies, you could probably guess them. Raising Arizona, Adaptation, Kick-Ass, Mandy, Leaving Las Vegas, Face-Off.
Mm-hmm. I would have
not guessed. Shocked. After that, National Treasure, The Rock, Matchstick. I want to watch Matchstick. I've watched that in a long time.
I want to watch The Rock again.
Matchstick Men, Con Air, Lord of War, Bringing Out the Dead. And then after that is where it starts to... So those are all the buttered ones. There's actually one more buttered one. It'd be Willy's Wonderland, but we add your score to that. It won't be buttered anymore. After that, it begins to drop off. National Treasure, Book of Secrets. I like it. Holds a place in my heart. As a fan, not a good movie. Wild at Heart, World Trade Center, The Croods. Though Trill would argue The Croods should be higher. Though The Croods, The New Age, is the...
History will be... movie. History will be kind to The Croods.
I agree. The Ant Bully, Primal, Gone in 60 Seconds, Drive Angry, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, Astro Boy, and then you hit the dumpster. The Frozen Ground, Running with the Devil, A Score to Settle, Rage, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, Ghost Rider, Arsenal, the New Orleans movie with...
is Adrian Grenier John Cusack.
Yeah, Grenier. Knowing the...
Oh, the Apocalypse movie?
The Rapture movie, right?
Yeah.
Bangkok Dangerous.
That was a great
Stolen,
one.
The Wicker Man, Season of the Witch. Oh, no, Left Behind was the Rapture one. That movie, woo.
Knowing was the one where...
Double zero from us.
His kid, like, finds the aliens, right?
Yeah, it might be. I think that might be
the little girl,
right.
Like, the only ones left after the aliens, like, just blow up the world or something. I forget what. I remember thinking it wasn't bad.
Something the World Ends. I always say Knowing is the Rapture one, but no, it's Left Behind is the Rapture one. Mm-hmm. Bad movie. But Nick Cage in general. Like this clearly is his lane now, right? Like, this has to be what he do. Minus National Treasure 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this has to be the lane. The weird, the out there. It fits him so well, and it doesn't seem forced and odd. It just kind of works.
No, I mean, he's carefully crafted that vibe for himself. I know I say vibe a lot, but like, I mean, part of it is actually acting in the roles, and the other part of it is the work that happens behind the scenes of him rolling up to the red carpet dressed like Lemmy from Motorhead.
I pick up on that. He also switches up his vibe very frequently. Like, I feel like one day he shows up full 80s, whatever. Like, I think at the premiere of Mandy, he looked like fucking deranged, like in a cool way. But then the next day he shows up wearing like Mongolian sheep hide.
Yes.
Like, he switches his vibe up real quick, and I love that about him.
Oh, my God. His beard, too. The lineup on his beard is always just bizarre.
Yeah. He definitely colors in his beard a lot because it's like his beard is like... It looks like painted on almost. It's great.
Are him and Eminem anamorphing into the same? Like,
yes. Eminem's person. Beard very weird.
Yeah, I don't like that one bit.
Very strange.
Eminem's, I don't know. Eminem's beard feels like some sort of like hair transplant for the face.
Exactly.
Next episode. So 70 for myself, 70 from Trill, 50 from Ken Jack. Audience
55,
gave it a,
sorry.
55. Audience gave it a 63. Next week, I mean Sunday. Sunday we will do Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. Trill Ballin's bracket time, though. Bracket time.
Del Mar.
I have to pull up the fucking characters because I'm gonna have to go off like a reference sheet here. Original Mortal Kombat character, is that what I'm searching?
We should make Jeff like figure out what the names are just looking at the pictures. Like, guess what the actual name is without knowing it.
Yeah.
Radio might be too bad on that.
No, it's horrible for radio. I'm just saying it would have been fun.
I have the sheet up in front of me.
All right. Well, okay, the first matchup is Johnny Cage versus Raiden. or Raiden.
Okay.
I don't know, however you say it. So Johnny Cage is Yeah, he's the Hollywood heartthrob actor, and then Raiden is the lightning god, channel between the the Earth world, Earth realm, and the outer realm or whatever it is, outer world. I don't know. Their fatalities in the original Mortal Kombat. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Johnny Cage, I think, like, I want to say he kicked you so hard in the chest, it went through your chest, and then Raiden electrocuted
you to death. Raiden was definitely electrocuted you to death. But I don't remember Johnny Cage's. I don't even know if I played the original Mortal Kombat. But I remember his was kind of cool in the newer ones.
Here, I'm looking it up. Oh, you know, he just uppercuts you and the head comes off.
That's kind of cool.
I mean, my novice opinion, Johnny Cage, easy here.
Yeah, I got to go with Johnny Cage.
I'll dissent and go with Raiden just because I love electricity villains and just electricity characters in general.
Everything seems same old with that cat. I like Cage. He seems different.
He's like the all-American guy. He's like the...
Also, he's like one of the only ones that I actually recognize, so...
It's like they were designing characters and they're like, let's just make something that's like a cross between Shawn Michaels and Tom Cruise. the next matchup is Sub-Zero versus Sonya Blade.
Oh, that was the easiest Sub-Zero win of all time.
Yeah. Sub-Zero is the blue ninja.
Yeah, no, I Sub-Zero is one of the ones I know. And then say the Sonya other one.
Sonya Blade's like a troop, so just keep that in mind.
I am, and I don't give a shit. Sub-Zero wins by a million miles.
Sonya Blade looks like she knows Johnny Cage.
She's the one that tells the guy.
Were married. Her and Johnny Cage were like married and had a daughter at one point.
Well, there you go.
I think their daughter's name is Cassie Cage.
She stands no chance against Sub-Zero.
Sub-Zero rips out your spine and your skull like Predator. He's like
was the best fatality in Mortal Kombat 1, I think. I got to go with Sub-Zero. He's the coolest. No pun intended.
Yeah, Sub-Zero. That sets up a crazy next round matchup.
Yeah. The next one is Liu Kang versus Kano. And I got to say, I hate Kano so much. I've always hated Kano. He's stupid. He's ugly. He sucks. He rips out your heart. It's Liu Kang because Liu Kang's got like the kicks. And Liu Kang, he's fast and he's got the good moveset.
What was his fatality? I don't even know.
Let's see. Liu Kang.
I'm voting with you. I'm voting for Liu Kang because he was always awesome.
I think that was like the SNES one because that wasn't very violent at all.
He looks easily for
Liu Kang?
as a bystander. I just like his look. I'll use the word vibe again.
Yeah, Kano sucks. If any of our listeners are like Kano freaks and they've played with Kano and like Kano, I'd be surprised. I feel like he's the most despised original MK1 character.
He looks like a really shitty sci-fi character that I don't like. I don't like the eye. He reminds me of Cyborg a little bit. Not into it. Liu Kang, I'm going with that guy.
The lore is that like Liu Kang was the person that Sonya Blade was trying to catch. Like he was an international criminal, and Sonya Blade entered the tournament to try to kill Kano.
Mm. I'm gonna watch the Mortal Kombat movie tonight.
90
because I don't really remember it at all.
I don't know if that's in the movie, but what I would do actually instead of watching the movie is just watch a compilation of all fatalities MK1 through MK11.
I'll do that. I'll just do
it's
both.
A much better
just
ways watch, to f- or spend a 40 minutes.
I just do
you
both.
Get the fatalities and the babalities and the friendships and whatnot. All right, the final matchup is Scorpion, and because there's only 7 original fighters. He's versus Goro. So Scorpion's the yellow ninja with the hook.
It's more like a kunai, right? It's a kunai on on a rope.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's on a chain, though.
It's like looks like he plays the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep, he is wearing yellow, Jeff. And it's versus Goro, who is the gigantic creature? I don't know. He's got 4 arms. Yeah,
Goro looks big. Fucking stupid. I don't like Goro.
Man. I kind of like Goro because his appearance was so different because every other character was digitized, and then Goro is actually done in claymation. They digitized Goro's claymation in the original Mortal Kombat.
I'm watching original Scorpion's original fatality movie. He just takes his face off and just burns the guy to death.
Well, look it up. It inspired a game on the SNES or N64 called Clay Fighters, which is an entirely claymation-based fighting game. Don't try to tell me video games have gotten better.
What's the name again?
Clay Fighters.
Clay Fighters. Oh, boy. Oh, this doesn't look very good. Oh, no. Nope. Pass on that. Pass on that.
So we all agree on Scorpion here, right?
Yes, definitely Scorpion for me.
Yeah, Scorpion. Yeah, I Goro. What is Goro? He reminds me of fucking Archer from The Small Soldiers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There was an 80.
Except he didn't have four arms.
There was a forearm, whatever the fuck they were called.
Troglodyte.
Yeah. There's definitely a forearm one. Fucking that might have been the Dennis Leary one. Oh, wait, no, Dennis Leary just played it.
Dennis Leary was just
showed
himself.
Up at the end of the day.
He was. Hey, what was up? That?
They tell me not to smoke.
The Jim Nutter.
What's up, you little bastard?
Smoking's one of the greatest pleasures in life.
You got microchips. I got a check for you.
Fuck you. You got IPAs? Fuck IPAs. Wait, what the fuck was his name? Hang on. Hey, he had a funny name.
I went in for a latte. They asked me. I said, what the fuck is that? What's a latte?
What's the line we
I
played?
I can't coffee be coffee.
Mochaccino, Frappuccino, El Pacino. What the fuck? Yeah. So like, it was from 97, though, and so we had to. Gil Mars was his name. Gil Mars. Phil Hartman
played.
Was
that his alter ego?
No, it was his real name in the movie.
Gotcha.
Phil Hartman's character was Phil Fimple.
Mm-hmm. More like Phil Simple.
So we got Johnny Cage versus Sub-Zero in the easiest fight ever because Sub-Zero wins for me. No one's going to beat Sub-Zero. I'm sorry, because Sub-Zero can freeze you and then shatter your frozen body.
Mm-hmm. It's That's pretty much a win fatality. Forever.
Yeah, like a fatality they used in movie we had just watched, Freaky. They used that fatality in Freaky.
Yeah, the freezing and killing is it's the most badass kill you can have in a movie.
What did we watch?
Game.
Jason X or something with Carabas, where he takes the lady and freezes her head in liquid nitrogen and then slams it on a counter and her head just explodes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's absolutely what happens.
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think Sub-Zero is going to be an easy win here.
Liu Kang versus Scorpion. And I love Liu Kang.
I want Scorpion versus Sub-Zero so bad.
It's got to be Scorpion versus Sub-Zero. I'm putting Scorpion ahead of Sub-Zero. Because Mortal Kombat comes down to Scorpion and Sub-Zero.
So this is all you setting it up for the big fight. Now I'm going Sub-Zero. Because Scorpion reminds me of the Steelers, and I fucking hate the Steelers. So it's a biased pick.
I got to go Sub-Zero, too. I got to go put Sub-Zero. We breezed past Liu Kang. I'm sorry, Liu Kang. But, like... Scorpion, the freezing is so much cooler than having a kunai on a chain.
Yeah. Like, the kunai is cool, though.
The scorpion also is like a demon. His fatality is he pulls off his mask and then breathes fire on you.
Yeah.
He's a skull. Whereas I think Sub-Zero is a dude.
Yeah, he's a physical person.
Not that plays any to your, like, I'm just trying to say they're not the same. The one's built different. Sub-Zero is built different because he's got the frozen powers.
Mm. Freezing powers are just they're almost always going to take unless you're Iceman from the X-Men movies because he was kind of a bitch. No offense.
He got killed off in Days of Future Past.
He got his head crushed in Days of Future's Past, but that was I think one of the flashback parts. And then I think he lived in the real world. Was the actor Sean Ashmore?
Sean Astin. It wasn't Sean Astin.
Sean Astin? I think it's Sean Astin. I don't know. But no offense Sean to him,
ass.
but
Sean Astin. Fuck Sean Astin.
Iceman was big ass. Big time bitch in those movies.
Iceman. There was a U.S. soccer player named the Iceman for a while.
You need to be really fucking good if you're going to call yourself the Iceman. There's always there's going to be a big expectation there.
He was not good. He played for
the U.S. national team, and he was not good?
Aaron Johansson. He was from Iceland.
Oh, okay.
He was a defender, I believe. I might be wrong on that. He's called the Iceman. And then he played for the team that lost to Belgium in 2014.
Fucking Chris Wondolowski, man.
Wando, Mr. Wando.
Wide open net.
All that motherfucker ever did was just siphon fucking goals from people. He just little tap-in goals. Now, we hit the one time.
He's still playing.
He had one chance to do it at the World Cup. And he fucking blew it.
Fucking son of a bitch.
He fucking blew it. Michael Bradley also that fucking giveaway against Portugal. Stupid.
Also still playing. He's on Toronto.
I mean, the U.S. hasn't been in the World Cup in 7 years. Okay, that's unfair because it's only every 4 years. But still, it's crazy that it just... So 7 years.
How are we not good? How are we still not good?
I was gonna say,
can't just be because all the good athletes play the other more popular sports in the United States.
Trill, have a kid who plays soccer. Have a soccer prodigy.
U.S. women's team is full up, my friend. They're more than
set. Whatever she wants to do.
No, I'm saying have a boy.
Oh, nah, Trill, have baby number two and make him good at soccer.
The U.S. women's team does not need any more people.
I don't want a boy, dude.
Because he'll play all your video games.
No, I just don't, you know.
Don't touch my shit.
Don't touch my samurai sword.
I like having a girl. I don't want a girl, dad.
You didn't build this baby Yoda Lego. When did you get this? No, like 15 years ago. It's still sitting on my bottom shelf.
Okay, they got these Legos though. Like they're like pictures now. Have you seen them? You like build them and you can make pictures of like Darth Vader or Yoda
or the
Beatles. Like $150.
Oh,
Darth Vader or the Beatles?
Well, no, but they're separate kits.
I know, but what a wide range of things.
But the Beatles one is like you look at the back of the package and there's this guy sitting next to a wall with, you know, John Paul, George, and Ringo on it. And then, you know, you look at the package and it's like you can design with each one John Paul, George, or Ringo. So in order to get all four Beatles, you'd have to spend $600
separate
Lego Beatles pictures to hang up on your wall.
Dude, these don't even look good.
Legos are expensive. We talked about it before. It's not a cheap thing to do, especially like the Technic kits or whatever. So I'm not saying you shouldn't spend the Lego, but I just like who just wants to buy like one Beatles thing and just have one Beatle? That's maybe like somebody's that big of a Paul or John or George or Ringo fan. But for me, you can't just have like Ringo. Well, you just had a Ringo. Like it was, you just hung it up in your office. It was just that Lego picture of Ringo. And people were like, "Oh, Ringo." He's like, "I'm just a big Ringo guy. Ringo's my favorite Beatle. Octopus's Garden. Don't Pass Me By. Like these are underrated classics, my man."
The Paul one, the Paul McCartney Lego. I just sent it. It is, what the fuck is that?
He looks like. I mean, they all look like PlayStation 1 characters. Like they look like the Calm pictures in like Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say that, or like the icon picture in like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. Like this is the character you're gonna play. Here's the picture of him.
How much are the original Bionicle going for on?
Oh, those are the days
on eBay.
Lego wouldn't be alive right now if Bionicle didn't carry him on the shoulders
Bionicle,
in that period.
Bionicle fucking ruled. $100 for the original Bionicles. Wow, I loved those when those came out. I thought they were the coolest thing. $170. Look at this.
What are Bionicles?
It was like they were like robots that you built out of like weirder Lego pieces. And they were a pretty big hit for a while, but now they're memes. They got memed, but now they're very expensive. Now they're a lot of money. Okay, that's it. I gotta go eat some dinner.
Hey, let's get out of here.
That's it. Next, on Sunday, we're fucking reviewing Barb and Star. Don't ask me what the fuck we're reviewing. I determined it this week. I usually don't. I know that. Don't ask me. If you ask me,
don't ask me.
You're not allowed to watch the movie.
I'm not going to tell you.
All right, that's it. For Ken, Jack, and Trump, Jeff Lowe, talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office.